call regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. We are still watching what is going on in Washington, D.C. As I sit down here on a Tuesday, it is noon Eastern time. And we still don't have a deal, or at least we still don't have a passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill in the Senate, although it looks like we are moving closer to that. Whether or not this bill actually gets to the House and to President Trump's desk by July the 4th remains to be seen. Democrats in the House are set to hold a caucus meeting tonight ahead of the anticipated vote later this week. Politico reporting about 11 a.m. Eastern that Senate Republicans have released an updated draft of the mega bill ahead of final floor action. 887-page text. Not expected to be the final legislation, though, passed by the Senate, because further revisions are being made in the last moments before the final amendment and passage of the bill. But Senator Thune says he believes that we do have a deal. And so far, the language zeroing out the taxes on suppressors, short-barreled firearms, and any other weapons is intact. It is in the budget bill. Of course, again, that wasn't the original language adopted by the Senate Finance Committee, which would have zeroed out both the taxes and registration requirements. But the Senate parliamentarian ruled against that language. It's been, it's been a twisty and a curvy path to get to where we are right now, including, you know, going back even before the budget bills started being debated, efforts to get the Hearing Protection Act and the Short Act passed as standalone pieces of legislation, right, which obviously didn't happen. There's also been, I think, a lot of discussion about, you know, who's been doing what to make sure that the language is as strong as possible. And I know that the company Silencer Central has come under fire, supposedly for lobbying to keep NFA taxes in place. Now, that I don't think that was the case. I think it was a complete misrepresentation. But Brandon Maddox, who's the CEO of Silencer Central, joined me on the program today. We talked about that, talked about the no compromise letter that Silencer Central did not sign on to. Talked about where Silencer Central stands on repealing the NFA, what they're doing about it. So it's an interesting conversation. Appreciate Brandon Maddox sitting down with us for a few minutes. Take a look and a listen. Brandon, thanks so much for coming on the program. It's good talking to you, sir.
Yes, sir. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. So, it's so hard right now because we've got, you know, everything is up in the air with the One Big Beautiful Bill. We don't know what's going to happen. As we sit down to record this, the Senate has yet to take its final vote. Looks like there's still some lobbying and headcounting going on. But what we do know is that the plan B that was offered by Senate Republicans, it was acceptable to the Senate parliamentarians. So right now, the budget bill includes language that would reduce the taxes on suppressors, short barrel firearms, any other weapons down to zero. Now, the registration requirements that are still in place because of the parliamentarians' ruling. But this is, still, I think, a big step forward. Do you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years. So to be able to get rid of the tax stamp, I would say it wasn't even in my head as a possibility to actually, you know, get rid of the tax stamp as part of a budget process. I had no idea that was even an option. So for me, it's kind of a win out of left field. I think it's great.
So I know that Silencer Central has gotten some grief, and I think undeserved, in my opinion. There was a document that, you know, started floating around a couple of months ago showing that Silencer Central had spent money lobbying for a provision regarding NFA taxes, right? And this was sort of presented as the company was arguing in favor of keeping these taxes in place. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we haven't had a lobbyist for that long, but just remember, this is during the Biden administration. So
right.
I'd always been coached, right or wrong, that unless you have 60 U.S. senators that are going to vote for Hearing Protection Act, that it's kind of off the radar. So honestly, in most of my career, we haven't had 60 U.S. senators that are Republican that would vote for HPA. So honestly, it doesn't even register on my, you know, radar as a possibility. you know, our lobbyist does most of the conservation groups. If you look at his name of his business, Natural Resources, that's who he affiliates with, is mostly the conservation groups. And his thought was, hey, you know, currently all of your customers are paying a $200 tax. That's going to the general coffers. It just goes to the treasury. It's not getting used or earmarked for anything. If we could earmark it towards the Pittman-Robertson, which is already a system in place, that money goes to building ranges, it goes to conservation. Is that something that would benefit your customers? And I'm like, well, it's better than what we're getting right now, which is nothing. So he sat down with Blake Moore, congressman, created a bill in the House, and basically it would take that money that was going towards the tax stamp and it would just reallocate it. So it wasn't trying to get rid of it or anything. It was just basically taking the funds that were already being paid in and putting into the general coffers, putting it into the actual Pittman-Robertson so it could go to conservation, you know, help fund state organizations that do the game, fish, and parks, and then also it builds ranges. So that was a theory. You know, the other unwritten theory was it would create more awareness around sportsmen, around hunting. You know, traditionally, Sinewhistle Central has focused a lot on the hunting market. Mm-hmm. Starting this here in South Dakota, that's been our biggest niche, is mostly hunters. So it's just kind of also a way to educate hunters that you can hunt with suppressors and they're legal, because that's still an obstacle in a lot of areas. So there was, yeah, I would say that, you know, the honest truth, the backstory is I got an email saying, hey, we want you to sign this letter for no compromise. And the hard part for me was it was directed to, you know, Senator John Thune, which is our U.S. Senator. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I know him personally. So I thought, gosh, you know, why wouldn't they just call me and say, hey, could you have a talk with, you know, your senator who you see at church every Sunday, instead of signing this derogatory letter that felt like a petition. And as soon as I said that we weren't going to sign it or didn't respond to them, that's when people went down these rabbit holes trying to find ways that we must be working against them, which is unfortunate.
All right. So let's delve into that a little bit deeper. Sure. You did not object, let's say, to the outcome of the what no principles letter was, or no compromise letter was proposing. It sounded like you objected to the tone and the tactics that were used.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I got an email on a Sunday night, and the organization was from, I have not ever had any communication with, or basically nothing from. So out of the blue, I get an email that says, hey, you know, we need you to sign this, and here's the other people that are signing it. It felt very heavy handed. And so I talked to my team internally, and they just said, hey, you know, we haven't worked with these people. We don't know if we want to come out and say that we want 100% no compromise. What if something else happens? And so we just decided not to respond. And as soon as, after about 2 days of not responding, that's when the attack started, you know, coming after us. And I think people were looking for reasons why to buy into that. I mean, the reality is that Sinewistle Central also owns Banish suppressors. So we are actually a manufacturer. And if you look at market share, Banish has the largest market share of any silencer manufacturer in the country. So based on that fact alone, Silencer Central and Banish would have benefited significantly from the Hearing Protection Act. Very much so. I mean, the analogy I use for my wife is, if I was able to do $125 million last year with Banish, with both my hands tied behind my back, think what I could have done if the Hearing Protection Act had gone through. So I don't think probably most people know that we own that and didn't realize that we have an 07, which is a manufacturer's license. And at the end of the day, we are a manufacturer.
What about the Short Act? Did you have any opposition to including the Short Act in the budget measure?
You know, not at all. We don't really do any type of short bow rifles, or, you know, we basically 100% silencer. So honestly, I didn't even really read the Short Act, didn't understand much about it. But no, we had no objections whatsoever. I mean, people that ask you about it socially, I just say that, hey, a pistol is much more concealable than a short barrel rifle or a short barrel shotgun. So I don't understand the concern and why people are having to pay the register of these in the first place.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, you talked about you see Senator Thune in church every Sunday. You didn't sign on to this letter. Let me ask you, did you lobby Senator Thune personally? Did you have any conversations with the Senate Majority Leader about this language?
No, you know, because honestly, when I talk to him, it's more socially. I mean, I haven't really talked to him specifics, but I have talked to his office about it. You know, I've stayed in his touch with his office and try to meet with him probably 3 or 4 times a year in D.C. But honestly, you know, I got a call in January of this year saying that the House was going to run HPA through basically budget reconciliation. So I was like, okay, And the advice from the person that called me, this lobbyist, it wasn't our lobbyist, it was an industry lobbyist. He's like, make more stuff. So that's actually what we've been doing. We've been doubling down, and we're sitting on a lot of inventory. So we're obviously disappointed the Hearing Protection Act didn't go through. But no, talking to Thune's staff, I mean, honestly, we never thought Hearing Protection Act had a chance, just because you didn't have 60 U.S. senators. So it was kind of new information recently within the last few months of going down this budget reconciliation process. You know, people ask how it would impact us. I said it would change our model if Hearing Protection Act went through. We would go from, you know, doing service and product to more focused 100% on product. But we felt like the upside before the product itself is so significant, it would be a huge win for us. I mean, I would use the facts that, you know, only 25% of FFL dealers actually have an SOT. So if that increased, you know, the 20,000 have SOTs now, went up to like a full 80,000 of all the number of FFLs in America. Just think of the number of sales we could get, and it would benefit South Dakota and create more jobs here.
Well, absolutely. but at the same time, Brandon, I mean, you know, I think that there's an argument that, again, if nothing else, given, you know, your at least a close geographic relationship to Senator Thune, that you personally, maybe the company itself, could have been, should have been more active and engaged in this process. Do you think that, you know, going back to January, between January 1 and July 1, is there anything you think that maybe you could have or should have done differently?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I guess, you know, hindsight's 2020. You know, at first we were like surprised that it could actually happen. But no, could we have tried to, you know, talk to our legislators? I mean, the thing is, we did do a CEO fly-in. So every year I do a CEO fly-in with the National Shooting Sports Foundation. And we did. We went to every one of our elected officials and we did lobby. We led with the Hearing Protection Act. So from that perspective, and talking to Senator Rounds, talking to our Congressman Dusty Johnson, and then I've never actually met with Thune in D.C., but his staff, I mean, we talked about it. Could our lobbyists have doubled down on it? Maybe. I think that we were still skeptical, like, could a policy issue actually get through the budgetary process? And if it didn't, are we going to get stuck with nothing? So, yeah, I would argue we didn't probably go in as heavy as maybe we could have on HPA. I think our lobbyists, one of them being an attorney, was very skeptical that you could get a policy through the Byrd rule. You know, he looked at different ways to ride it, met with other lobbyists that were trying to do the same thing, and just couldn't find a way to get it through in his mind. So I think we started thinking, okay, well, we'll see what happens. And if something doesn't happen with HPA, maybe there is a backup option where we get a win out of it anyway.
Okay. And, you know, again, I mean, like I said, we're still waiting to see what the Senate does. If the Senate does pass this bill, it's got to go over to the House. I don't think the NFA language is one of the controversial aspects of this, but I mean, for Democrats, certainly. But it seems like, you know, I haven't heard any Republicans raising complaints about this. So my hope is that this language is going to survive, and it looks like it will. The question then becomes whether or not the bill actually can pass the House or the Senate in its current form. But, you know, going forward, obviously, there is going to be, I think, a push to continue to deregulate the NFA, right? Yeah. And if you get this language in place where the taxes are zeroed out, I think that A, you are going to see more suppressors being sold, more short-barreled firearms being sold, right? Yeah. We were talking with Knox Williams about this yesterday. He says that helps to bolster the argument that these items are in common use, that they're protected by the Second Amendment. But also, you know, I've spoken with the Representative Andrew Clyde about the rationale for getting rid of the registration requirements. And his argument is, listen, you know, the registration is actually the registration of who paid the tax. So yeah, if the tax is zeroed out and there's no tax to be paid, why do you need that registry? Which to me suggests that, you know, there might be a legal avenue to challenge the registration requirements going forward. Would you like to see, and do you expect to see, and would you like to be involved in those efforts to, again, repeal or undo the NFA in its entirety?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we would totally benefit, you know, us as a company. Just, you know, I could see Silencer Central would pivot more to being selling all products like we do now, maybe through a website, but then double down on the Banish opportunity, just selling through dealers, selling direct to consumers that way. But no, we would definitely be interested in that. I do think that the NFA will eventually become 100% deregulated, whether it become through legal means or just voting. Because also, now that the it appears as if the tax is going to go away, then what's the reason, like you're saying, for the registration? I mean, it's not like they're going to lose anything. You know, something I don't hear people talk about is it would probably create the Pittman-Robertson where you'd have to pay the 10 or the 11%. So that would create a different tax revenue for them in a different way. And based on the volume of growth, they'd probably end up taking in more money than they are now currently.
Yeah. All right. Now, you know, and I haven't really talked a lot about this on the program, but there is a counter argument to all of this. And that is, okay, if you can zero out the taxes on NFA items through budget reconciliation, presumably the parliamentarian would go along with raising the taxes on NFA items. How concerned are you? We've seen Democrats say that the $200 tax stamp is too low, right? They've talked about raising it to $600. How concerned are you that if Democrats get control of Congress, all of a sudden the taxes on your products go up from $200 or from $0, let's say, to $600, $1,000, $2,000 per item?
Yeah, no, good question. So it does concern me, but I feel like in listening to the debate from the left, they were mostly concerned about the process staying, you know, intact than they were talking about the price. So hopefully, you know, if they do get back in power, which obviously they will at some point, hopefully this is far enough off their radar screen where they don't even think about it. Or hopefully between now and then we can get them completely deregulated and then it's not an issue. But to go back to the, you know, us, Sinewitzer Central, focusing on the tax for going to conservation. The other reason why we were doing that is there's several states in my mind, blue states, that would like to completely make silencers illegal at a state level. So part of our strategy was that if your Oregon's, your Washington state, your New Mexico's, if they were getting that tax stamp going into their and funding their state game, fish, and parks, maybe they would be less likely to make them illegal at a state level. So that was part of the goal, the strategy, if you will, was to protect the state rights because they'd be getting that money coming through and even potentially opening up other states. Whereas if maybe California, if they aren't selling them there, couldn't get access to the fund. So maybe if they did open up access, they could get the $200 tax. So that goes back to the conservation side. But no, we would definitely be interested in being more involved with HPA, you know, efforts. I think that there's definitely an opportunity, I would say, in the next 5 years to completely deregulate those. And I think that should be the industry's press push, because if we can, then we're less vulnerable from the Democrats coming in and increasing the tax later.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Brandon, I appreciate you taking the opportunity to sit down with us and go over this. We'd love to have you back at some point in the future. Maybe we can celebrate the passage of the One Big Beautiful Bill and hopefully the zeroing out of taxes on suppressors.
So I'll tell you, the only thing that does worry me a little bit about this zeroing out on the bill is if you look at the start date, it looks like it's January 2026. And you know, that's just unfortunate because, I mean, you know, if you think about from an industry perspective, me as a business person, no one's going to buy anything between now and then waiting for it to go through. So it's an unfortunate, you know, so of course I've had communications with, you know, some people, leadership, and asking them, hey, what is the appetite to potentially shrinking that up? And right now it doesn't seem like, you know, they're open to that just because of all the, you know, sort of hitting they get and press and people pushing them. They're kind of like pins are down on gun related stuff right now, which, I mean, it's good to get the win, but also it's disappointing that, you know, 4 or 5 months before it actually goes into place.
Yeah, that is that is true. And again, I like you said, I mean, there are so many. I think it's a legitimate concern, but I think that both Majority Leader Thune and Speaker Johnson are trying to wrangle hundreds of cats and get them to, you know, move in one direction. And you're right. I think there's a lot of those things that a lot of these tweaks that can make the bill better. They're probably just going to fall by the wayside because, yeah, you're trying to keep the coalition intact at this point.
Yeah.
So. No, all right, Brandon, listen, thanks again for coming on the program, sir. Look forward to doing this again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, sir.
Again, I appreciate Brandon sitting down and talking with us, and I would love to have him back again in the future. All right, now on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day and our recidivist report. I don't have a headline to show you, but a Rochester, Minnesota man given probation and community service over a shooting incident. According to the Post Bulletin in Rochester, Minnesota, a former Rochester Charter Commission member got probation on drug and firearm charges in Olmsted County District Court on Monday. 26-year-old Benjamin Allen Harris given 5 years probation after pleading guilty to one charge each of drug possession and possessing a firearm while ineligible. Now, again, this was a plea deal here, right? According to court records, it was Christmas Eve. Rochester police responded to reports of shots fired at a home. People living in the home told police they were sitting downstairs and they heard breaking glass. They showed police a bedroom window that had a bullet hole, as well as a bullet hole in a window frame and a mirror in a bedroom that had been struck by a ricocheting bullet. There were people who were in the room at the time. It was occupied. An off-duty officer in the area also reported hearing gunshots. Police went to a home with a garage door open, that is when Benjamin Allen Harris and his parents met with officers outside. According to the complaint, Harris's mother showed police video that her son had sent her of Harris exiting an upstairs bathroom while holding and racking a firearm. Harris had also sent his mom multiple text messages suggesting that he was suicidal. In the home, police found a black and gray semi-automatic pistol, unserialized, more than 100 rounds of 9mm ammunition, along with substances that tested positive for cocaine, methamphetamine, amphetamines, as well as miscellaneous pills, what police described as blades, bags, and cash. Now, I gotta say, probation and community service for this, it's not entirely inappropriate, maybe, as long as there's some counseling involved here. I mean, you got somebody who is suicidal, armed with a gun. Rather than shoot himself, he apparently fired off a couple of rounds, or at least one round, at a nearby home. And according to the Post Bulletin, Harris was ordered to serve probation concurrently on the charge with a stay of adjudication for the drug charge and a conviction of the firearms charge. So if he goes through probation, everything's fine. The drug charge gets wiped out, but the conviction for the firearm remains in place. He was also ordered to pay restitution of about $1,000, given a fine of $500. Harris's attorney said that Harris is currently unemployed and is completing substance abuse treatment. The judge also noted his record with the humanitarian group Team Rubicon and other community-oriented activities. She said, "I think you have plenty that you can give back to the community." Harris, by the way, had also been adjudicated for second-degree arson as a teenager back in 2014. So this was not his first run-in with the law. And again, apparently no mental health treatment ordered. Substance abuse treatment he's already undergoing. I feel for Mr. Harris. I hope that he does turn his life around. But given the actions, I'm just not convinced that pure probation and some restitution was the appropriate sentence here. On to today's armed citizen story from Clearwater, Florida, where police say an armed home intruder was shot and killed by the resident of an apartment complex. This happened Saturday morning. According to authorities, the 45-year-old resident grabbed a gun and shot the intruder as they were making their way into a unit and demanding money. That intruder later identified as Rodolfo Bautista Espinoza of Clearwater, Florida. Local news reports say that it's unclear whether Espinoza and the victim knew each other, but the Clearwater Police Department says that intruder was shot and killed in self-defense. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A good Samaritan honored after saving a man from a fiery crash in St. Paul, Minnesota. Now, the crash itself happened a while ago. In fact, it was last April. The individual, Michael Coy, was driving down the road, and he saw a burning car on the side of the highway. There were other people who were already there. They were trying to open the driver's side door. It was pinned up against a guardrail, but Coy stopped his vehicle. He got out, ran around to the other side, opened the passenger door, and actually got into the vehicle that was on fire so that he could undo the seatbelt. That's when the flames became overwhelming. He was forced to retreat, but then he and the others grabbed the driver's legs, pulled him out through the driver's side window just a couple of seconds before the car was fully engulfed in flames. The driver, Samuel Orbovich, nominated Michael Coy for the Carnegie Medal of Heroism, and he was one of 17 recipients to be awarded that medal this year. Coy said, "I consider myself somebody who did a spectacular thing. but he doesn't see himself as a hero. He said, I wasn't scared until the flames kicked me out of the passenger side. And that's when I had a moment of doubt we weren't going to save him. But he said, you know, I would have had to watch him die. He would have lost such a huge part of me that day. I wouldn't have been the same man. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. I am not taking anything away from Michael Coy. I'm glad that he has received this recommendation or this commendation. But it is worth noting that there were other good Samaritans there who also helped to save Mr. Orovitch's life. They might not be honored by the Carnegie Foundation, but they too did a very, very good deed that day. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information, including an interesting development at the DOJ when it comes to defending the federal law prohibiting handgun sales to adults under the age of 21. We've got to that story for you and much more. So be sure to check that out. We'll see you back here tomorrow for the last Bearing Arms Cam and Company of the week, because yeah, I'm going to be off on Thursday, getting a little head start on my Independence Day celebration. But we'll see you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.